Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest for this morning is reinvention expert and USA Today best-selling author, Claire Cook. Claire and I will be discussing her latest collaborative book project with Chicken Soup for the Soul, titled Reboot Your Life, 101 Stories About Finding a New Path to Happiness. Good morning, Claire. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm great, Johnny. Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be on the air with you.
Fantastic. It is a pleasure to share the airwaves with you this morning. Reboot Your Life, 101 Stories About Finding a New Path to Happiness is an excellent read. The book really reminded me about the times that I had to reboot my life.
So yeah, haven't we all, back. Huh? Haven't we
yes,
all?
Yes.
And we will again, I'm sure.
That's the amazing thing. In reading the book, what I realized that we will continue to reboot our lives as needed. So there's
yes,
no such
absolutely.
Thing that we just, well, I rebooted my life, that's it.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice? I mean, I think the first time we do it, we think, oh, this is it. Now I'll live happily ever after.
Right,
and then,
right.
Whoa, life changes again. And but it also makes life so much fun. You know, think of all mm-hmm. the opportunities and the many lives we can live. So I think
right,
if you choose
right.
to embrace that change, it can just open up a whole new exciting things for your life.
So
as it has,
so
I know, for you and for me.
So true. Well, congratulations to you and Amy. It's a terrific book, and I strongly recommend it to everyone to read because it's highly inspirational. And most importantly, not so much just it inspires someone, it really gives people an opportunity to relate to the other authors at times
yeah.
when they, too, are going through the process of this
yes.
reboot in their life.
And don't we learn? We learn from modeling. You know, that's how we
right.
learn, from reading these stories and thinking, whoa, this person lived through it. Maybe I will too, you know. So, yeah. So I think it's so important. I was a teacher for many years before mm-hmm. I wrote my first book. And it was, you know, that's how the children truly learned, by watching
yeah.
other kids learn to tie their shoes or jump rope or whatever. So
right, right. So true. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Well, at my age, it might be a little longer. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. You know, I grew up as one of eight kids, and I think when you grow up in those great big families, you just want one little piece of something to be just all yours. And so mm-hmm. I grabbed writer really quickly, and I followed that path, you know, right through the first, you know, story in the little people's page of the Sunday paper to, you know, writing in college and majoring in film and creative writing. And then I just panicked. My dream was to become a writer, and I just got scared and didn't do it. And I think I listened to all the people telling me how hard it was to break in. So I hid from my lifelong dream for many years, for decades. And then finally, it is never too late. My first book was published when I was 45. And at 50, I walked the red carpet at the Hollywood premiere of the movie version of my novel, Must Love Dogs, you know, starring Diane Lane and John Cusack and mm-hmm. Christopher Plummer. And I'm now the best-selling author of 11 novels. And my first nonfiction book, which is called Never Too Late, Your Roadmap to Reinvention, mm-hmm. which is a number one Amazon bestseller in women's personal growth. So that's leading up to right now, where I'm the proud co-author of Reboot Your Life with the wonderful Amy Newmark. So that's my story as fast as I could tell it. So I really feel that I'm living, you know, the life I almost missed, which I hope for
yeah.
everyone listening, you know, if you've got one of those lifelong buried dreams, do it. Just, you know, I almost didn't. And I'm so, so, so glad I did, because all of these things that people tell you can't happen really can happen.
Right.
So that's
right.
my, yeah.
Very, very interesting. We talked about in the beginning the fact that we actually reboot our lives several times
mm-hmm.
in a lifetime. And so coming back to you, you didn't exactly do much until you're 45.
So, well, see, I did. I think it's probably the way I told it. I was absolutely, I mean, I did wonderful things along the way. I was a teacher for 16 years. I won, you know, the Governor's Fitness Award for Innovative Programming. I, you know, did lots of creative things, but I was truly, truly hiding. Which, as readers, you know, read through my books and as they read through Reboot Your Life, this is such a common theme that even though we might do creative and productive, and it wasn't that I was, you know, sitting at home eating bonbons for a couple of decades. I mean, I was out there. I was just in all the wrong ponds. I was afraid to go to the place I really wanted to go. And I think that's a pretty common thing. So, you know, overachieving in all the fields that don't really, where your heart and soul aren't really invested, is kind of, you know, for me, it was taking the chicken way out, which, you know, the good news is all of these jobs gave me wonderful material when I finally became a novelist.
Right,
so
right.
Nothing is ever wasted. And I met wonderful people along the way. And I think, too, when I finally did this at midlife, I appreciate it so much. I mean, I don't think a day goes by that I'm not grateful to finally be doing what I was born to do. So, you know, in some ways, I think I'm having more fun now, and I'm fearless about it. I'll try anything, do anything, which in my 20s, I, you know, personally, I was much more of a people pleaser, much more worried about doing it the right way. And I think I think, especially if you're in a creative field, you have to just go for it.
Right.
So, you know, so I, all by way of encouraging anyone, again, out there listening who's just on the verge.
Let me answer this. What life epiphanies led you to reboot the last time in your life?
Or, so for me, for the big one.
The major reboot in your life,
the big one.
The most major reboot, the big one.
Yeah, which was absolutely writing my first book. Well, for me, I really think it was a midlife wake-up call. I think that there's, it just hit me one day, and I remember the exact place. I was sitting in outside my daughter's swim practice at 5:30 in the morning, watching all the kids go back and forth, and it just hit me. And I was, you know, working full-time as a teacher, consulting for two other schools, but it just hit me with, you know, the force of a poolside tidal wave that I might live my whole life without ever once going for it. And, you know, already time had passed, you know. Suddenly at midlife, you realize, I don't have forever. I might be one of those people who only talks about it. So one, you know, cold New England winter, I sat outside in my minivan every morning while my daughter was swimming, and I wrote the first draft of my novel, you know, out there in my minivan. And it was just such an immediate thing. I think I had had the skills probably to do it for decades, but this was, it just hit me. It was now or never. And that book, you know, was published right away, and it was, it was really me standing in my way all those years. So, that was absolutely the epiphany of, you know, this is it. You know, I could be one of those people, like so many people who always talk, I'm going to write a book someday, you know, someday, someday. So this was my day.
Certainly, that's so true. You speak to a lot of people, and obviously you're there to get them motivated to reboot their lives. Why do people need to reboot their life?
You know, I really think it's a choice. I think, you know, if you're happy, if you're, your life is bringing you joy and love, and you're bringing love and joy to the world, and things are going well, why? There's no need to reboot your life. But I think when those things start to slip away, then, you know, life is precious. We should be getting and giving those things. And sometimes it's just a little tweak. I don't think rebooting your life necessarily means a massive change like I made in my life and like you maybe made in your life. It might just be that perfect little tweak, like, you know, maybe creativity, bringing some creativity in your life that you're going out once a week and taking a painting class or, you know, whatever, or you're at bringing, you're going out and walking or you're, what, you know, I don't think it has to be a big thing, but I do think think, you know, I would be the last person to say, okay, everybody, line up. We're rebooting tomorrow. You know, if life is working. I mean, don't you think
right.
most change, though? I know for me, the procrastination
yeah.
finally
mm-hmm.
became more painful than actually writing a book. And that, to me, is a sign you need to reboot, because it was easier to write it than it was to feel bad about not writing it. So that might be a little bit of a signal, too.
It's true. A friend of mine told me a long time ago, it's like the day when you are not your true self, that you are no longer happy or whatever that feeling may be, your true self,
yeah.
then it's time to do a sort of self-reflection and
yes.
pull out that canvas and start drawing.
Exactly. That's such a good way to put it, Johnny. And, you know, the other thing, I think that's so, so true. And often what people do is if their life is no longer fitting them, they try to change themselves. And I know
yeah.
I used to do that a little bit as a teacher, because I was sort of the one, you know, I like to have a lot of fun, and I'm probably
yeah.
a little too loud to be a teacher. And I was trying to always try to kind of tone myself down. And instead of, why don't I just go find the life that suits me, who I am
mm-hmm.
in my heart
mm-hmm.
and soul. And as soon as I started writing, it was just nobody ever said anything to me other than, we want more. And that's when you know you found the right place. So, because, what you know, instead of changing ourselves to fit what's around us, why not go look for that canvas that's a better fit?
Right, right. So true. How did your collaboration with Chicken Soup come about?
Oh, that was such a fun thing that happened. And it was, I love these wonderful, spontaneous, you know, kind of, I guess, it's synchronicity when things just click
mm-hmm,
like that.
Mm-hmm,
it actually, mm-hmm. Amy Newmark and I connected on Twitter, of all places, where you and I have connected.
That's
and
right.
she, yeah, and I retweeted something which was actually a story about her that I retweeted for another author. She looked, you know, at my page
yeah.
and saw that I've done all this reinvention stuff, and that the theme of all my books is essentially reinvention. And
right.
then she called and asked if I'd write a story for them. But we had
mm-hmm.
such a wonderful conversation, and she's such a terrific person, which I know, you know, you are both, you know, well know.
Mm-hmm.
And so she asked me to co-write it with her. So it was just this
mm-hmm.
fabulous connection, and I'm so glad I did it. I really got in touch with, you know, the teacher part of me again in a
right,
good way, and
right.
reading all these wonderful stories, and I've connected with a lot of the storytellers in the book since,
yeah.
with social media, of course. We're all friends
sure.
now. So it was just one of those great experiences, and I you know, probably a good thing for me to say for people listening, that I almost said no to it. Not that I'm not so impressed with Chicken Soup for the Soul and Amy
yeah.
is fabulous, but because I was so busy, I was, you know, hard at work with a book about to come out, working on another novel.
Mm-hmm.
But when I took a deep breath, I realized what an opportunity. There's such, you know, Reboot Your Life and Never Too Late. I mean, how perfect. They're meant to be sisters,
right.
you know. So
right,
it was
right.
just like, you have to say yes, even
yeah.
if you're busy. I think if it's growth and if it's fun, say yes.
Yeah. What's interesting as well, the very core of you, when it's all said and done, has that true nurturing nature of wanting to help others, to help themselves. And so what better
yeah.
outlet could it
yeah.
be?
Yeah. Oh, what an interesting way to put that. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yes. You know, it's such a wonderful message that they have, and I see how it's so in sync with what your message as well, and I just think it's interesting how people find the right people to connect with. It just kind of, the universe sets it right up.
So true, so true.
Yeah.
What is the best way to get out of a rut?
Well, you know, I'd like to say there's this really neat, pretty way that you can, you know, climb right out and not have a hair out of place when you get there. But I
mm-hmm.
do think that transitions and change, it's messy. It's messy, and there's no perfect
yeah.
way to do it. So
yeah.
just put one foot in front of the other and start climbing, you know? So, and you don't, you know, another thing is I think people think, often think that they have to have the answer or even all the answers before they begin their journey. And the truth is, we all figure it out along the way. You're allowed to make mistakes. If you make a mistake, you just say oops and keep going. And, you know, you figure it out along the way, and you just keep, you know, there's no clear path, I don't think, for any of us. And if there is, lucky you, but it doesn't happen to me. And you know, our world is changing so quickly, too, that,
right.
You know, for me as an author, my first book came out in 2000, and the things that worked for books then are not working at all anymore. So I've had to completely reinvent myself as an author, which is great. I've loved it. I feel that I have more control of my career now, and I'm closer to my readers now. So I think, you know, just to climb out of a rut, just do one little thing to start heading in the right direction. Take a breather, look around, take another step, and just don't worry about being perfect. I really think perfectionism is just, it's a myth to begin with, but it also can really, you can become frozen because of it. So you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to look good doing it. Just go.
Well, it is the journey that makes the difference, because if you reach perfection, that's the end.
Exactly. That's such a good way to say it. Yeah. And I think we all think, we look across the street and think, oh, everybody else's, you know, house looks perfect and their lives look perfect. It's not that way for anyone. I know, I'm sure everyone you've interviewed has. It's just so easy to stand there and think everyone else has the answers but you. So, you know, I'm here to say I don't have them either. But I'm sure enjoying the journey. I'm certainly enjoying the journey.
So true. In reading the book, one of the things that I gather, obviously, everyone follows their dreams. Should everyone really follow their dreams?
You know, I think it's a choice. Again, I just think it's not a requirement. I mean, maybe, and I think this is where we get into, life is a lot more fun and interesting, in my personal opinion, if you follow your dreams. But I don't have the right to make that choice for someone else. And maybe another person would just prefer to keep dreaming. And in a way, maybe that's your dream. You just like the fantasy. But I think if it's fear that's keeping you from going after your dreams, at that point, I would encourage you, you know, to know that one of the things that I say in Never Too Late is that fear is a fact of a well-lived life. And I think you just have to realize that. And if you're feeling fear, you're on the right track. It gets scary out there. But, yes, you can do it. I mean, I can remember having to, I mean, really, at 50 years old, to walk the red carpet at the Hollywood premiere. Are you kidding me? That was scary. But I did it, and I had an absolute blast, and I have that memory, you know, those memories forever. So, you know, I think it's absolutely worth pushing past the fear. But again, you know, we all have the right to make those choices in our lives. So, you know, I'm the last person to tell people, you know, this, it's my way or the highway.
Right. And ultimately, too, I think the ultimate litmus test is your happiness. And if you're happy just daydreaming the various roles in your life, that I wish I could do this, I wish I could do that, and if that itself makes you happy, you've reached the end zone. And then, of course, there are people that say, I want to be it, and then that's you set that end zone, so to speak. Yeah.
And I think it's what I've had to learn to do, because when someone shares a dream with me, I immediately want to go into teacher mode and help them strategize to how to get there. And it's like, okay, so tomorrow you wake up, you do this. And then I realized, this person, I'm completely, you know, getting in the way of their dream. They don't really want to do it. They just want to talk about it. And I have had friends like that. And I think I've learned to recognize the signs, you know, step back. You can't do it for someone else. They have to choose whether or not they truly want to do it themselves. So I try to, you know, it's hard, especially when you can see how they could get there, Johnny, But, and I'm sure, you know, and you want to help. So sometimes the biggest thing you can do to help is not to help.
Well, ultimately, I'm sure, Claire, that you've encountered in many of your encounters with the people you work with, that every one of us have our upper and lower limits. So we have to operate within that comfort zone. I know that I'm sure over the years you have sort of pulled up the different folders for the same individual because based on their comfort zone in addressing certain issues.
Yeah.
They are operating at their optimum level, so to speak. So having said that, what are some of the practical strategies that you can share with people in terms of them wanting to change their life?
Yeah, you know, the biggest, my biggest piece of advice is to rise above the negativity. You know, whatever their motive, people, they're just always going to be people out there who will tell you why you can't or shouldn't do whatever it is you want to do. And you just have to decide to do it anyway. And I guess I just think even today, that's my biggest challenge is there's just always going to be negativity out there. And I don't put it back out into the world, but I just picture myself kind of rising above it and doing it anyway. and then to be, we talked about this a little bit, but to be who you really are. And the big buzzword these days is branding, but I really think of it as authenticity. And
I agree.
The first job I've had where I wasn't pretending, or at least trying to pretend to be a slightly different person, who I am and what I write in my novels, you know, in my nonfiction book, in Reboot Your Life, are totally in sync. And I think there's tremendous power in that. To confound expectations. If everybody's doing it, it's already been done. So originality counts. And try to put a little surprise, a little bit of you into everything you do. And I think it will help you stand out from, and you know, in a way that other people will see you. And then one of my, you know, to do something nice for someone, I think it's easy to get needy when you're struggling to figure out what's next. And believe me, I've been there. You just want to say to every single person you pass, can you help me? But many of the great things that have happened to me were triggered by something nice I did for someone else. People talk and, you know, your actions determine what they say. And then the final one that I can think of is to get your tech together. Everything you need to know about this crazy, quickly changing world we're in right now can be found online. And when you get your computer skills up to speed, whatever your interests are, and you're comfortable enough to do your research, to network, and even to create an online presence so people can find you and connect with you. I just think the internet is a great equalizer, and so many of the opportunities that we didn't have even a couple of years ago are just out there waiting for you to take advantage of them. So usually when I say this when I'm teaching a workshop, the people who need it just kind of glaze over because it's scary. I mean, I remember when I first had I was teaching, and we all had to get computer mentors 1 year. And, you know, it's embarrassing when you're like, how do you turn this on? But, you know, it doesn't take long to get up to speed at all. And now I'm just, you know, the way I've never felt closer to my readers, they can reach out to me through Facebook and Twitter and my website. And I'm sure you're the same way. We, you know, it's just so many opportunities come that way these right now. So I think it's important to just jump in and figure it out. So
true. We talk about authenticity as your personal branding. And the other two major components that I feel that's important is you got to be humble as well.
Absolutely.
I think humility adds so much to it because then you realize that you will always encounter someone that knows more than you do. And you always encounter people that you know more than they do. My motto has always been, you always speak to someone, in this case, eye to eye. You don't speak down, nor do you speak up.
Exactly. Well, I think that's so, so true. That's such a great point. And the other piece of that, which I think is all part of one and the same, is that life is a roller coaster. And I have honestly had the experience of, you know, maybe being in a big author, you know, thingy and, you know, and having someone maybe not, you know, be particularly humble herself speaking to me. I don't know how to say that nicely. You know what I mean, though.
I understand.
Yeah, and then a year later, it's all switched around, and that same person is asking for a favor. So I think it's that old thing about never burning bridges and just knowing that, you know, I just feel that, you know, it's why I never use the word fan. It's just my personal thing, because I feel that if anything, I'm a fan of my readers and they give me the gift of my career. So I just kind of, you know, to pretend that we're on different levels, just that word says that to me. That doesn't mean it says that to someone else. They could have a completely different, you know, definition of it. But I just think what you say is so true. To remember the world doesn't revolve around you.
So true.
And I think people forget that. And, you know, that was one thing. Being one of eight kids taught me that lesson real quick.
And then ultimately, speak from the heart. Because when you do that, everything else comes into focus, because what happens now, you're addressing the main forces that actually govern all our decision-making, which is two separate equal forces, love or fear. If you look through the lens of fear, then you'll be intimidated, and that's that stop sign that stops you from achieving whatever you want to achieve, including happiness. If you look through the lens of love, the love for yourself and the love for others, then it propels you to a different level of sense of urgency in terms of wanting to accomplish something.
That's such a great way to put it. I love the way you look at that. That's wonderful. It reminded me a little bit. I've had a lot of people ask me, because, you know, as you do, I know I speak in front of a lot of big groups, and people say, what do you do about stage fright and getting nervous? And I actually don't at all. But what I do when I'm speaking, and I think what does that, is I'm not thinking about my own fear. I'm thinking about making eye contact with the people in the audience and making sure that they get, you know, my gift, which I guess is the love, is to give them what they came to get. And so when you take the focus off yourself and your own fear and make it about the people that, you know, were kind enough to come and hear you speak, it changes everything. And I think it's very much in keeping with what you just said. That was a wonderful way to put it.
We're at the level right now, people want to engage you in the sense of the authentic you, and they can see a mile away if you're acting out a role. Are you sincere in your presentation?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a different style of speaking, and I know you and I, when we go out to speak, we speak from the heart. We are experiential speakers, to whereby it's not the fact that we've read thousands of books and let me relay this information to you, okay? And that makes a big difference, because they know they can make that connection. They can see themselves through us. They know that we're genuine enough to whereby when we reach our hands to touch them or shake their hands or pat them on the back, that we're real. And I think that's what real connection is all about. If you're authentic, if you're humble, and if you speak from the heart, you can make real connections.
Totally. I think that is so true. And I think if instead of being focused on the heart and being authentic and just being who you are and sharing what you can bring to the world, if you're focused on, oh, did I just stumble over those sentences, you know, or which, you know, I do all the time. But, I think it's important to let myself do that, to reach for what the real thing that I have to say, instead of being so polished and perfect that, you know, the heart goes away. So I've I remember experimenting with that a little bit in the beginning. And when people, the longer lines would be at the book signing table or more people would be gathered at the end, it was always when I wasn't using my PowerPoint, my perfectly rehearsed speeches. It's just not my thing. And I think people rather have me be real. And I think when you can embrace that in your own life, I feel that if I met someone at the grocery store or at a fancy Hollywood party or at a book signing, I'd be exactly the same person. And I think that's your authenticity. You don't change yourself for the people who are around you. You just, you know, you just walk through the world being who you are and giving what you can.
Interesting. So true. What would you like for the readers to gain from reading this wonderful book?
You know, I think, again, this is me. I think whatever they need, and, you know, what is that old saying about when you need a lesson, the teacher will appear or whatever. I'm not saying it right. But, you know, that thing about I feel that I could read a book at one point in my life and then read it again and get something completely different out of it. So what I love about these 101 stories is that it's all there. You know, I think that whatever you need, if you're thinking about taking, you know, you need to get in shape, or if you're thinking about you need some adventure in your life, or you need to, you know, whatever it is, I think there's so many wonderful opportunities. And the specific thing that you're looking for doesn't even have to be there, but it will send you on that path to it. And just, you know, there's nothing like going through all these fabulous possibilities to think, oh, I want to do this, or, but maybe it's really that that I need. So I just think, you know, what I love about the Chicken Soup for the Soul books is that there are just so many different points of view which open our world and give us lots of choices.
So true. What I like about it as well, the various stories, if you are well on your journey in rebooting yourself, there are times where you need to see something that sort of reinforce that you're moving in the right direction, and to see someone already hitting the finish line.
I think that's so true. And I think, you know, again, we learn from stories. I think it they inspire us, and I think it's great. And another thing that I love, I mean, again, as a writer and as a teacher of writing, what I love about the whole Chicken Soup for the Soul series of books is that they present so many opportunities for writers breaking in, you know, and several of, because this is my first experience with them, I've had quite a few of the writers in the book reach out to me and say, I can't believe I'm in a book with you. Oh my gosh. And it's like the coolest thing. And it really made me remember what it's like to get published for the first time or the second time. So, you know, that's another thing that just my eyes have been opened to, that, you know, it's a really great way to start getting published. And I love that they put out calls for submissions all the time. And so that's another wonderful thing. If there are, you know, there are usually aspiring writers and emerging writers listening to interviews. So, you know, definitely something to check out. And I know I always try to share as much as I can with aspiring writers, too.
Right. And well, Claire, having you share your humbling experience, that in itself engages future readers, listeners, and everyone else knowing the authentic you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that's, don't you think that it's for all, I mean, not just for me, but for all of us to, you know, I felt the same way about the other stories in the book, that they, you know, because we never stop. Of course, I'm reading it too, saying, oh, this would be a good idea for a novel in their lives. But I think, you know, we share ideas and we share our journeys and we, you know, whatever stage we are, you know, personally in our journey, you know, there's always another chapter coming up. So, and that's what makes life fun, you know?
Wonderful, wonderful. I have selected several stories from the book as talking points for this morning. Please give us a short rundown of these stories. And I selected the stories because there are certain connections that I make to them.
Mm-hmm.
I'll comment afterwards, after you had the opportunity to tell us about the stories and so forth. As usual, Chicken Soup had broken down their books into 10 different sections. The first section is Do It Now, and the story is Conquering the Giant Provence by Dawn Marcus.
Yeah, and of course you have read it. I went through them all again when I saw these questions, and I just remembered I loved them all. It was so great to reread these. But half of my brain is in a new novel, so if I mess anything up, you're going to have to correct me. I kind of go into like writer brain. But anyway, this one, the Conquering the Giant Provence, was a great story about an empty nester couple. Who I think they were at a wedding and just seated with these people they'd never met before who were talking about their bike trip. So, you know, a couple of glasses of wine later, they end up signing up for this a really strenuous bike trip through southern France. even though they're completely and totally out of shape. But they train hard for a whole summer, and then they end up doing it and having this terrific mm-hmm. trip. And now they go on major, major bike rides, like 80 miles a day, 100 miles a day. And they've been married for 28 years, or they were when this started. So good for them. I just thought it was really inspiring, and it completely made me want to go take a bike trip.
Well, it's a wonderful story in the sense that I've been to Provence, so I can understand what the motivation is in terms of, like, hey, I got to get this done.
It's such a beautiful place. Oh, absolutely. But, you know, it'd be easier driving, too.
You're right. So true.
But, yeah, what a gorgeous part of the world. Yes, yes. That was a good one to pick.
That's right. The next one is in the category of Follow Your Heart. This is just a beautiful story. Finding Perfect Love by Dr. Sherry Hall.
Yeah, this was my favorite line in the story was when she talked about getting back to her musical soul. I thought that was so beautiful. And it's really what she did. This is a story about an underprivileged woman who goes on to become a prestigious doctor. And but in doing so, she gives up, and maybe to prove herself a little bit, she gives up her true love, which is music. And, you know, throughout the story of her life, she divorces and leaves her kids alone. And then she eventually gives up medicine and goes back to, uncovering that buried dream, which is something I certainly did in my own life. And she, you know, has successfully written and performed her songs. But again, getting back to her musical soul was just a beautiful way of putting it.
One of the things you emphasize is that it's never too late. And
yeah.
So this is a perfect story for that, in the sense that obviously she has a wonderful career as a doctor, and yet the true you, the true self, never changed. They get refined over the years. And so now this particular situation where the opportunity arises for her to pursue that personal goal.
Yeah, you know, I often say to people when they're struggling, you know, they know they need something more in their life. I teach reinvention workshops sometimes, and, you know they need more and they're not sure what it is. I just tell them, you know, get quiet with yourself and think about that thing you loved to do before life got in the way, you know, before you had kids and bills and, you know, all the, you know, busy, busy life. And often it's the same thing. I mean, it doesn't always hold up, but I know certainly for this woman it did, and it certainly did for me, and I think it's at least a place to start. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was another wonderful choice.
The third one is Taking a Chance, Moving to Hong Kong by Mary Lou Dreiger.
Yeah, this was, as a former teacher, I could absolutely relate to this one. And, it's about a husband and wife who are both teachers, and they found themselves just burned out and disillusioned in their current teaching positions. They both had a few more years, and yet they finally just opted to retire from their current jobs, but felt that they still had a lot to give as teachers. So they applied for teaching positions in Hong Kong and were off on a fabulous new adventure.
What's interesting about it is that when I read the story, it's the concept of picking up and going to a new country.
Yeah.
And of course, it's a lot easier now than, say, perhaps when I came to the United States. I was 18, and I could relate to the fear from within. There's so much excitement, and yet there's still fear from within.
Yeah.
If you're not fearful, then you're not a human being.
I think if you're not feeling fear, you're playing it too safe and easy, you know? I mean, that's always one of my touchstones, that, I'm on the right track. I am terrified. Because that's where the growth happens, you know?
Right.
I think when you're feeling a little bit bored in your life, there's not a lot of growth. But when that fear starts to kick in, and I think we're conditioned to see fear as a bad thing, but I think it's a good thing.
Right.
I think it's, you know, you're awake, you're alive. And again, you don't have to be perfect. You just, you know, you don't have to know how to do Hong Kong before you go. You know, you figure it out. You figure it out. So So,
so cool.
And we're so lucky to have the internet. I mean, I always feel there's a YouTube video on how to do anything. If I don't, if I have to go somewhere new, I just start, or if I'm invited to speak at a conference in another country, I just start, somebody has done something that will tell me how to do it. So I think we're lucky to be in that world. It used to be a lot harder to get that kind of information.
That's
There'll be a message board out there or a Facebook group or something.
So true.
And I think people love to help each other. So
Right. The next section is Find Your Purpose. What's Your Story by Amy Newmark?
Well, our wonderful Amy Newmark, the Chicken Soup for the Soul publisher that who we both love so much. I think this is just a great story about the year she turned 50 and both of her kids were off at college. And instead of putting her feet up and taking it easy, which she completely deserved to do, she and her husband bought Chicken Soup for the Soul. And what I love about this story is that she was revisiting her own passion. And back when she was in college, she traveled throughout Brazil collecting spoken word poetry. So this was really a way for her to bring her passion back into her life. And it's still, I think what I love about Chicken Soup for the Soul is she's still, it's for the people. These are not rarefied, glamorous stories, real stories about things, people we might meet at the grocery store or, just by walking down the street in the neighborhoods that we live in. And I certainly, the characters in my books are very much the same way. I think our lives are fascinating, endlessly fascinating, and chronicling them is just a wonderful thing to do. And I think Amy does that beautifully, and it was a great story.
Mm-hmm. And the next one is Starting Over, Finding Me at 50. This is another 50 story by Liz Maxwell.
This is a big year, huh?
That's right. Yeah. I'm looking at it from a standpoint of we're all living longer. And what I'm looking also is that these are individuals who have experienced life. Now they have an opportunity to do something different, to contribute in some ways. And not only that, you're looking at it, you're starting out the second half of your life. So what do you do about it?
Yeah, and I know when I was in my 20s, I can remember looking up and seeing people at 50 and thinking, oh, my God, life must be pretty much over by then. And, I really thought that. I didn't mean to be rude, but that's how I felt it. Uh-huh. And now that I'm in my 50s, oh, my gosh, it's so young. How did it get to be this young? And, I have, it's such a pleasant thing to get to that stage of life and realize it can be the most fun time in your life. And I love trying new things. And I'm into kayaking now. I just tried out one of those Elliptic Goes the other day. They're like elliptical machines, but they're scooters. They're awesome. So, they're just like all these fun new things that you can do. So finding me at 50 is a story about a woman who, goes through a breakup of a relationship that she's not even completely invested in. And then she goes into a depression, but not just about this particular relationship, but about her whole life, all the relationships in her life, and all her life dreams along the way. And I love that she thinks back to a time in her life when marigolds and sunflowers represented her inner dreams, and that kind of becomes her mantra. And through this process, she realizes, I think, that it's not just about the relationships, but it's about finding herself again, and that's what she does.
And so true, because we are on a journey, and sometimes, once in a while, we have to look back and look at what it's important to us.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes, as we're talking about rebooting and reinvention, you've got to kind of look back before you can look forward, because it puts it in a new perspective.
So true. The next section is Mind Your Health, My Big Wake-Up Call by Lori Lara.
Well, this poor woman had one of those awful experiences going in for her yearly physical and hoping that no one was going to say her weight out loud. And somebody said it loud and clear, and she was absolutely mortified. It was a big, big wake-up call, and I think it just snapped her out of her denial. And she just, I think, was shocked into getting fit. So she got past that, got past the pain, which is so often a part of rebooting your life. And she began taking kickboxing classes and training at a local martial arts school. And it changed her life, you know, something that was really started out as just an awful, embarrassing moment had a, you know, fabulous ending.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's something that we tend to take it for granted about our health and so forth. And now, for her, she had managed to turn things around in terms of making it something very special, something very personal for her.
Yeah.
And I've experienced
yeah.
it sometimes in the hustle and bustle life that we go through, we're not paying attention to our body.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the further you slide down that slippery
yeah.
slope, too,
yeah.
it's harder to get out because it's not like, oh, I can just do this one teeny thing and I'm going to be in good shape by next week. It's,
right,
you know, it
right.
just gets tougher and tougher. You know, when we were talking earlier about ruts, you mm-hmm. you know, it's harder to climb out of that particular rut, and it's embarrassing in the beginning when, you know, you first go to a class or mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the that old expression about the only way out is through. There's just not an easy way to do it. And good for
yeah.
her that she did it anyway and opened up, you know, her life is, I'm sure, so much bigger because of it. I mean, I think it was, you can get stuck and you're just
right.
really not living your life anymore, whether it's a physical thing or whether it's, you know, I wrote a novel once about highway driving phobia, and a woman had just kind of closed herself in, and, you know, all this fun was all around her and she couldn't get there. So, you know, I think we sometimes sabotage ourselves and then we just get stuck. And again, no pretty way to get out. You just have to do it. And mm-hmm. how wonderful that this woman did it and shared her story, which I thought was fabulous.
Mm-hmm. The next one I thought was just totally wonderful. Overcome.
Wasn't it? Made me cry. Oh.
I know. Yeah, this is just a wonderful story. From Homeless to Happy by Kamiya Taylor.
Yeah, this was a great story. And a woman who was just, you know, caught up in the downward spiral of poverty, was living in a motel, you know, where she paid weekly, I believe, and she was one step away from moving into her van with her 8-year-old daughter, and yet she just couldn't see herself. You know, how did she get here? It was just a series of bad breaks. And finally, she was able to find support and advice and then a temporary job, a temp job. And because she did such a great job at that, she ended up finding a permanent position, and she dug herself out of the place she was stuck. And it's, you know, for me, and again, you know, so many of these things touch mm-hmm. my fictional characters. I had once written a novel about a woman who was temporarily homeless. And it's really eye-opening. You know, it's so easy for us to
right.
think us and them. It could never happen to us. But I'll tell you, talk to a few people like this Kamiya, who just did such a great job telling her story, and you realize, I mean, you know, we're all the same. It's just a few bad breaks can really do this to you. So good for her, and you could just feel it in her words how much she tries to help other people who are in the same situation as she lives her life. And I think that's great. I think if we all open our eyes as we walk through, there's often so many ways you can help someone just with a little thing. You know, it doesn't mean that you have to change
right.
your own life, but there's so many opportunities to help.
So true, so true. The next one I'm looking at is Taking Time for You, Annual Reboot by Connie Rozier Riddle. And I really like this because it reminds me of my personal thing that I do is annual rebirth, about taking some time for self-reflection in order to move forward.
Yeah, I mean, this is good for you that you do that, Johnny. That's wonderful. Yeah, this woman, in order to find balance in her busy life, she takes a trip alone every year to recharge. I think that's just such a wonderful, inspiring thing to do. And, you know, I should probably do that too. I keep saying, after this book, I'm going to do it. And then I say, after that book, I'm going to do it. But I also, I think having these experiences, and so much of, I spoke at a wonderful women's conference in, you know, on Isla Mujeres, Mexico. And mm-hmm. so a lot of my trips, and I'm sure for you too, are these, have this kind of built in, but it's a wonderful thing to do to recharge like that. And,
sure.
And yeah. So that's, how long have you been doing that, Johnny? I think that's wonderful.
I've been doing it since ninth grade, in the sense that just before my birthday every year, I would sit back, reflect upon what all the different hits and misses. And so that period of time allows me to really contemplate on the things, celebrate the hits, obviously, and recharge in terms of what I need to do to correct the misses and then plan for the future.
Wow. Good for you. That's great.
Yeah. So it's a little bit different, and of course, over the years, it gets to be more spiritual and so forth, but the idea mm-hmm. is that you have that quality time for yourself, and just sort of really to think, my purpose.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
How I can impact others in so many ways, and that brings me to the important question I want to ask you, because you do talk a lot about to make room for me time, so why don't you share with us your thoughts about that?
About making, well, you know, I think finding room in your life for me time is really about remembering who we are. I think it's easy to just get so caught up, you forget about who you are. So, you know, remembering who you are, nourishing your creativity, I think, is something. One of the things I'm loved about being a teacher is that children still remember how to play, and we start to forget that as we get older.
Right.
And I've met so many people who have lost that side of themselves, or we get these messages back when we're in school that these are the you know, it's so easy to separate people into categories that, okay, this person is the mathematician, and this person is the artist, and this one is the singer. And you start to get this message maybe, I don't know, in fourth grade or something that changes the rest of your life, and you think you can't sing or you can't, you know, write or whatever it is. And I don't think you necessarily have to be brilliant at everything you do, but having some kind of a creative outlet, it's not about the product so much as the process. And I feel that way about things I'm not even particularly good at. They just, they're soothing, and they give me a different way. You know, they bring something new to the way that I look at the world. So I think me time is just sometimes even just trying new things. So many of us go through life, and when was the last time you tried anything new or stepped outside of your comfort zone? So I think it's, again, if you don't want to have any me time, it's your choice. But I think life is a lot more interesting when you do. And I have really made a kind of a pact with myself that if a new experience comes walking by me, I'm going to jump and at least try it. And it's always fun. And again, as a writer, it's often material. So,
so
you know, it's all good.
Well, not only that, I think society as a whole is coming to a full circle, in the sense that back maybe about 30 years, 40 years ago, I think you have more me time back then than you do now, because of the fact that now you really can't avoid communication. You got a cell phone. People are tracking you down, and or you're carrying your laptops. People are able to email you. So you're working almost, if you chose to, you can be in contact 24/7.
And lots of people who take their iPhones into their bedrooms with them, and it's, you know, they're going off all night. It's hard to hear yourself think if you don't carve out that time and consciously decide Right. And I do know, for me, you know, I talk a lot about how people say, you know, how have you written, you know, so many books in such a
yeah.
short time? It's because I get really focused. But one of my tricks is that I put my writing time first before anything else. I mean, I don't even check Facebook or Twitter or email. I get up very, very early and sit right down to the thing that is most important and will move me forward in my life. And I think when you let the world come in first, it's really easy to never get what you need to get done. And so that's my particular strategy, and I don't think it's necessary to be, you know, the necessary to follow that. But I think it's important to have a strategy. How are
right.
you going to get a chunk of time, whether you're using it as me time to relax or me time to move you toward the next, you know, phase of your life? You have
right.
to protect it. You have to carve out a little protective space that you can get that done, because you're right, the internet alone will keep you from ever getting anything really done. You know, it's like we've all gotten really ADD because these messages are, you know, coming in all night and
right.
and all day, and it's real, it's easy to be scattered. It's hard to find focus, and yet it's so important.
So what are your favorite stories in the book?
You know, I have to say I love them all, and as a former teacher, I hate to pick favorites, but I love them all, and I loved them in their variety, and I loved just all the really the purity of what's in there. It's just, you know,
sure.
people's hearts were right on the page, and how wonderful is that? So I, you know, wish every single writer in that book well, and I think they all did a fabulous job. And that's me not answering that question.
Hey,
so
they know where you
it.
Live. They're going to toilet paper your house or something, right?
Yeah, no, I just want to cheer them all on. I'm really bad at that. I can't even pick favorite songs or books. When people ask which of my books is my
yeah.
favorite, I can't even pick that. I always say the next one I'm going to write will be my best.
You should say, well, you know, actually, Johnny, it's the number one story.
Oh, that was a good point. Yeah, that was a good point. Good one. I said that next time I'll know.
I'm just teasing you, that's all.
I know you are.
Where can someone go to buy the book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Well, Reboot Your Life is everywhere. I don't think you can miss it. So they do a good job getting it out there. So wherever you look, just Google it and it will come up. And as for me, yeah, I'd love it if people came by and got to know me. I share writing and reinvention tips on my website, which is clairecook.com, C-L-A-I-R-E-C-O-O-K. And I'm on Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest and Google Plus and all of them. So, you know, I love having dialogue with, you know, people, and I post lots of fun things. So I hope people will come by and meet me.
Fantastic. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show
okay.
is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Well, my recipe for living life is to always remember every day, as one of my characters once said, that karma is a boomerang. It's one of my favorite sayings. So that's what I'll leave you with.
That's fascinating. I like that very much. I really like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's so true.
Much.
It's so true.
Very interesting. Well, Claire, thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be New York Times bestselling author Kathleen Flynn. Kathleen and I will be discussing her newly released book, Burnt Toast Makes You Sing Good. It is her memoir about food and love from an American Midwest family. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Claire, it has been a true pleasure. Thank you again and have a blessed day.
Oh, thank you so much, Johnny, for having me, and so great to meet you.
Likewise. Thank you. Bye-bye.